Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Jay Leno, the funny man who led late-night TV ratings for more than two decades, is coming to Charm City tomorrow for the Baltimore Speaker Series presented by Stevenson University. Leno is not only former host of The Tonight Show, he's a prolific stand-up comedian, movie voiceover artist, a children's book author, and a mechanic and restorer of cars. He joins us on the line from his garage in Burbank, California. Welcome to On the Record.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
So we'll talk about your career in comedy in a minute, but I want to start with the cars.
Sure, whatever you want. That's where I would start.
When you left The Tonight Show in 2014, you didn't retire. You hosted Jay Leno's Garage on CNBC and YouTube, where you review and ride motorcycles and cars. When did you fall in love with cars and motorcycles?
Well, I grew up in New England, and when I was a kid, it was a pretty rural area, so there were always broken snowmobiles, and it was the 60s, and it's a time, like, my mother never knew anything about cars, but she knew when the car didn't start. If she opened the hood and took off the big round thing and stuck a screwdriver down the little thing and wiggled it around, then tried the key, it would start, you know. So everybody had some mechanical ability, usually. I mean, cars now are much like iPhones or refrigerators or washing machines. They don't really break, and when they do, it's catastrophic, and you don't really fix things anymore. You just sort of replace it. But when I was a kid, you were just expected to know how to do these things, you know, change a flat tire, you know, fix the lawnmower, all that kind of stuff. So it was just part of survival, you know. Uptown was 7 miles, so you could either walk or you could fix your car or your mini bike, whatever it is you had, you know.
Okay, so that's how you got into it. But what is it about cars that captures your attention and holds it?
Well, I mean, the car was sort of the iPhone of the day. You know, kids go places virtually. We used to go places in reality. You know, if you wanted to see your girlfriend, you had to physically get from your house to her house. Now you just get on your phone and you text back and forward or sext or whatever it is you're doing. You know, it's just a totally different thing.
Okay, I don't mean to belabor this, but it's still the case there are lots of people who get to their girlfriend's house without falling in love with the car.
Well, I guess it was about the freedom. It was being able to go someplace without your parents and just the freedom of doing things and going where you wanted to go. Plus, there's a certain, when you have a mechanical bent, you like to know how things work. It's fun to take things apart and put them together. It sort of bonds you to the machine, you know. Modern cars, people sort of lease them or in this type of thing because you don't bond with it. When you break down by the side of the road, you open the hood, and you physically fix it, and it's running again, there's a great deal of satisfaction in that. And that works for anything, whether it's fixing a clock or a watch or anything mechanical. You know, it's just something that I've always enjoyed doing. And now, probably in the last 30 years or so, people are now viewing cars as art objects. It's sort of kinetic artwork, you know. They can be beautiful looking, but they also function. They roll, they make noise, they explode, they go down the road. You know, seeing older cars, vintage Rolls-Royce from the 20s or Pierce Arrow or something like that, there's a certain delicacy to it, where you can see the art, you can see what the creator was thinking when he put it together, what he wanted it to look like, what he wanted it to represent. So, it's one of those things you either get it or you don't. You know, I can walk into my wife's shoe closet and go, why do you need more than one pair of shoes? You just walk, oh no, but these are for this and this is for this. And it's the same thing with automobiles. Mars, why do you need more than one car? Well, you see, that one represents this, but this one was the seminal car that was a breakthrough that, you know. So, like I say, it's one of those things you either get it or you don't.
How many cars do you own?
Oh boy, you sound like my wife. Well, there's 187 cars, about 163 motorcycles.
Oh my goodness.
Well, now, how many pairs of shoes do you have?
Not 183.
Well, how many do you have?
I haven't counted, but, you know.
Look, you see, at least I counted mine. So you see that?
Yeah, I'm impressed.
You see that? You haven't even counted yours. There's so many.
What do you make of self-driving cars? Will they eventually replace the way we drive now?
Probably. Look, I'm all for, you know something? I go down the road and I see people reading magazines, eating breakfast, putting on lipstick. Most cars are self-driving already, except that people aren't paying attention. So to me, anything, any life-saving device is good. I mean, each thing that comes along, you know, when turn signals came out, people were, oh, what, now you have to flash, you got to put a light on, you can't just stick your hand out the window, oh, this turn signals, these are pain in the neck, these things are going to be, blah, blah. Hey, you know, anti-lock brakes, I don't want the car doing the stopping for me, I can tell. So people seemed, you know, Mark Twain used to say, I like progress, it's change I don't like, you know. And it's sort of the same thing, you know. I'm all for it. I think it's all one, because there are a lot of people who don't like to drive cars, who don't pay attention when they drive cars. So this is a lifesaver for them and the people around them. So I think it's actually quite good. For those of us that enjoy maneuvering a 100-year-old vehicle and doing what you have to do to get it to operate and watching this gauge while you're paying attention to that gauge and looking out for the road. I mean, it's one of those things you enjoy doing or you don't. If you don't, well, then it's fine. Then it's great, you know?
As I think we've established, I am not a car person, but I did watch a couple.
You know, I figured that out really in the first minute and a half.
I did watch a couple of episodes, and you're all the time saying, I was looking for this car for years or that car for years. So right now, what is your great white whale, the top of your list to find?
Well, you know, it's not so much the car is the story, because every good story has a human element to it. You know, I happen to own a 53 Hudson Hornet. So one day I get a call from this elderly woman. She's 94 years old. She says, oh, Jay Leno, I've got a 51 Hudson Hornet, four-door. Well, I'm not a four-door guy. Oh, my husband and I bought it new in 1951. We drove from New Jersey to California, and he died in 96. And would you just come look at it? I said, well, I already have a Hudson. Will you just come look at it? And I said, oh, okay. So I go to her house, and she comes out. She's 94, but looks 65. No hearing aid, no glasses, no nothing. And the car's got four flat tires. It's been sitting in the garage since he died in 96. And she said, well, will you give me $5,000 for it? And it looked pretty nice. It was worn out. It was the only car they ever had. I said, okay, so I bought it. I bring it back to my garage. It took me about 2 years to fix it up and get it painted. And I said, let me call her up and see if she's still around. So I call her up. Now she's 96. And she goes, oh, I said, you want to go for a ride? She goes, oh, I'd love to go for a ride. And she goes, can I call the kids? I said, well, yeah, who are the kids? My two sons. One's 74, the other one's 72. And she goes, I go, okay, yeah, get the kids. So I go out to the house, I knock at the door, and the two kids come to the door, and they've got her blindfolded. And they bring her out, and she's touching the car like the blind man with the elephant, you know, doing the whole thing. And we take the blindfold off. She sees the car. I mean, the car's brand new. New paint, upholstery. Oh, she starts crying. Oh, can we go for a ride? So we go for a ride. And we put the two kids, the 72-year-old and the 74-year-old, in the back. So we're driving along, and she's telling stories about driving across country with the two kids. So I look in the rearview mirror, and I see the two kids are poking each other, you know? So she turns around and just starts slapping the crap out of me. I told you to. You got him. And she's just whacking them, hitting them on the head. And the three of them are just hysterical laughing. They're just having the time of their lives, you know. And then the two kids, when I calmed down, they were telling me how when they were teenagers, they were so ashamed that their dad had this 1951 car in the mid-60s, you know, that they would have their dad drop them off like two blocks from school, and they'd walk the rest of the way because they're so embarrassed their dad had this old car, you know. And they had photos and pictures, and it was just a great story. I mean, she's passed away now. I think she died at about 103, 104. She lived a long time. But it was just a fun story. You know, it's one of those deals where every time I look at the car, I think of her laughing and she was really slapping him. I told you to stop all the way across the country. And she's just hitting him on the head, you know. I mean, it was very funny. And that's what sort of endears the car to you is the story that goes along with it. You know, like on my TV show, we've done an episode, The Car My Father Drove. And everybody's got a story. You know, Paul Allen, the Microsoft guy, one of the richest men in the world, he drives a 73 Buick Electra because his dad had one. And they used to go for ice cream and go to ball games and everything in this enormous 73 Electra. And it just has a special meaning to him. And that's what makes it fun, when you find a human element behind the car.
I think I kind of get it now. That's comedian and late-night icon Jay Leno here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Leno speaking at the Meyerhoff tomorrow night. Let's talk about comedy. With Twitter and YouTube, comedians can reach huge audiences just like sitting in their bedroom. How different is that from when you started?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing, because you can never be too late doing comedy. You can only be too early. By that, I mean, I see a lot of young comedians, they get a 5 or 10 minute routine, and then they go on YouTube, and then an agent books them in Vegas, and they might have a really funny 10 minutes, but they don't have a funny hour, or a funny hour and a half, or whatever the amount of time you need is. I kind of liked it, because I got to be terrible all across the country. And then the next time I went across the country, I was a little bit better, and the next time I was a little bit better than that. And so by the time I finally got here to Hollywood, I just had a lot of experience under my belt. I learned how to play all types of crowds, you know, from the Bible Belt to the strip joints and all kinds of situations like that. And I don't know. I mean, you can only live in the time that you live in. So your points of reference are, you know. But to me, I just sort of enjoyed, I really enjoyed the journey of sort of earning your chops at each step along the way, as opposed to just getting in front of a TV camera. You know, there's nothing worse than putting somebody in front of a TV camera before they're ready, because the full potential is not realized. You might see it, but by that time, So, yeah, it's just different now. It's more people see you, but it's harder to become famous, I think, is probably the best way to put it.
Who were your comedy role models?
Oh, I liked Robert Klein. I liked George Carlin. Especially Robert Klein, because Robert Klein was a middle-class kid with normal parents like I had. You know, when I was a young man starting out in this business, most comedians were older Jewish guys from the Lower East Side of New York who grew up during the Depression. And all their jokes were, hey, the kids today with the ba-ba-ba, you know, all this kind of stuff. And Robert Klein and Richard Pryor and to a certain extent David Steinberg, George Carlin, suddenly here was a group of comedians speaking the same language I was, talking about the things I was interested in, be it college life or popular music, or, you know, they talked about popular music from the other side, whereas older comics, these kids today with the long hair, blah, 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 you know, whereas they would talk about why long hair was good. Or, you know, it was just the opposite of what the older comics were talking about. So a lot of those guys are my inspiration.
Who are you finding funny today?
Oh, I think this guy, Nate Bargatze, is really funny. I hope I'm saying his name right. John Mulaney is really funny. There's a lot of really good comics now that I'm really enjoying. Yeah, I mean, that's the one good thing, too. I get to see a lot of people. I'm contradicting myself now, but I do see a lot of good comics on Netflix that I like.
How have late-night shows changed in the 5 years since you stepped away from The Tonight Show?
Well, I don't think they've changed at all, in the sense that they're all still monologue, comedy bit, first guest. I mean, they all sort of follow that same sort of pattern. I'm not saying things were better or worse when I was. You know, comedy doesn't change a whole lot. You know, if you listen to music from the 20s, you can identify it immediately as music from the 20s. If you tried to watch Rudolph Valentino in The Sheik today, the silent film, you'd sit there going, oh, my God, this is so slow and ponderous. But if you watch Buster Keaton or Charlie Chaplin from the 20s, I think you'd laugh just as hard, maybe even harder because of the clothes and the, you know, the speeding up of the film all the time, than you did back then. So I don't think, you know, there are certain tenets in comedy that are always funny. You know, the rich fat guy falling in the mud puddle is always going to get a laugh. You know, it's just one of those things, the pompous being brought down, you know, that type of thing, is always going to be funny. The only difference with a late night now is there's really only one. There's really only one topic that anybody talks about, and it dominates the news, and it gets a little weary. You know, that's why I give all the comics, Fallon and Colbert and Samantha Bee and Conan and Jimmy Kimmel, all credit, because everybody's trying to do a different version of the same joke. I don't mean it as an insult. I mean it as a compliment that it's hard because you have to watch all the other shows and go, did anybody else do a joke similar to this week? So you got to watch all the other monologues. Oh, God, no, Colbert had a great joke. It sounds like mine. You know, so you have to watch yourself a little more carefully.
Do you think the audience is interested in all those jokes? Is it the right joke to be telling right now?
Well, the problem with it is now we live in an era where if you don't like a person's politics, you don't like their movie, their acting, their singing, their comedy, whatever. You know, the idea that we all have to agree with someone. You know, when I did it and when Johnny did it...
Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson. People... You know, I think you're a Republican because you said this. Well, I think you're a Democrat because you said... And they really, I mean... I kind of pride myself on people not really knowing my politics and letting them argue it out however they wanted to. Whereas now people just kind of come out and state it. I remember years ago when I had a young comedian on Tonight Show making his first appearance, and his opening line was, you know, I'm a liberal Democrat. And I said to him, you know, don't give your politics. I would drop that line. Just do your material. People will figure out your politics very quickly once you get 5 or 10 minutes in. But by that point, you got them laughing. So maybe, but when you state your intentions of, well, he didn't. He just came out and said, I'm a liberal Democrat. And he did okay, but half the audience is like, oh, geez, what's this? You know, so for me, joke always comes first. Joke comes first, and proselytizing, whatever, comes second, you know.
You still do stand-up, right?
Oh, I'm on the road about 210 days a year.
Yeah. That was my question, 200 days a year. When do you have time to work on your cars?
Well, I try to come home every night. That's how you stay married for 40 years, you know. Anything west of the Mississippi, I fly home every night. Anything east of the Mississippi, well, I'll stay on the East Coast for 3 or 4 days. But I get home a lot, or my wife will meet me on the road and stuff like that. You know, one of my favorite ones was one time I was working in New Orleans, and I was in the East Coast. And I called my wife, and she'd never been to New Orleans. I said, honey, you want to come to New Orleans? Okay, fine. So she was going to land at 3 o'clock, and I was supposed to land at 2:30. I was perfect, you know. So as it happens, she's early, and I'm late. So I walk down to her gate, and she's not there. I'm going to go back to my gate. Then I go back to her gate. And as I'm doing this, I see these two cops that are watching me, you know. And finally, but the third time I go back down trying to look for these two cops, go, you that Jay Leno fellow? I said, yeah, yeah. You see him? Look, can we help you? I said, oh, yeah, my wife, I was supposed to meet her here. You know, I explained the story, and her plane was supposed to be, but she got in early, I got in late, and I know she's around here somewhere. I see these two cops look at each other, you know, you kind of raised eyebrow. And I go, what? What are you thinking? And the cop says to me, you know, Mr. Leno, sometimes women come to a city like New Orleans to see these bright lights, and they just run off. I go, okay, yeah, okay. I'm sure she has a runoff, officer. Right? I you're like she's barefoot. You're like she sees the bright lights and just runs. She just runs to the light. You know, she just runs to the light. I go, well, thank you. And they go, well, yeah, it happened. I go, well, no, I'm sure guys appreciate the effort, the police work, but I'm sure she hasn't run off. Of course, I found her in the coffee shop, you know. But, you know, I mean, just, you know, the great thing about being on the road is funny things happen like that. Just oddball. You know, when you live in Hollywood, you work on it, you get insulated to just the real world.
We look forward to seeing you. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for taking the time.
Jay Leno will have some funny thoughts tomorrow at the Baltimore Speaker Series presented by Stevenson University. We've got more information at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. Quick break here on the record, then a bonus Stoop story featuring a fast human and an even faster dog. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.